All right, welcome to the show. It's the Michael Slate Show. And I'm going to be speaking really fast because we have a ton of people to fit in today. Actually, not a ton of people, but a ton of things that you need to know to fit in today. All right, at the back end of the show, we'll be talking with Richard Falk on the assault on Gaza by the Zionist apartheid regime and the larger context, including the Trump regime's steps to erase the culture, history, and existence of the Palestinian people. So that's going to be a really, I'm really looking forward to that. But opening the show up, I'm actually really looking forward to this, too, because it's always a pleasure to talk with her. And I always come away with a brighter light in my head, okay? That's what happens, all right? I am really pleased to be welcome to the show. Sansara Taylor, writer for RevCom.us, Revolution Newspaper, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, and currently part of the National Revolution Tour. And Sansara is here to talk with us about the Mueller investigation and what the hell is going on generally in society with this. And it's really important that we dig into this. Sansara, welcome to the show.
Michael, I'm glad to be with you and happy to be in studio for the first time with you.
Yeah,
Thank you.
It's kind of cool. We should do this more. Just fly out every now and then. All right, well, let's start with this thing overall. I mean, there's been a hell of a lot of stuff that's happened over the last couple of weeks. And in particular, this stuff around what the Mueller report, all this other stuff. But it's a bigger question than just the Mueller report. There's something more behind this in terms of what people need to think about and what they need to know. Let's talk about that.
In the wake of Mueller's report, which we haven't seen, and we don't know fully what's in it, but we know there's no high-level indictments of the Trump-Pence regime, no new indictments, and Trump is using this as complete vindication and, to quote Steve Bannon, a bludgeon to go after all his opponents, to go after all opposition, and to slam ahead his fascist program. And it is a fascist program. And so you see, in the wake of this Mueller report, the Trump-Pence regime is more dangerous than ever. And we could talk about why that is, some of the forms that's taking, but they are puffed up. They're on a fascist rampage. We saw that at his rally in Michigan. It was a Nuremberg-style rally. We see this in his threats against ruling class opponents, his demands that the media blacklist major Democratic figures, his calls over and over again for retribution and accusations of treason against those who have opposed him. And on the side of the people, there's been tremendous disorientation and demobilization. For 2 years, people have been played and bamboozled by the notion. And how many times have we heard this? Wait for Mueller. Wait for Mueller. Oh, you know, there's childhood separation going on at the border. And people spread these memes smugly. Oh, Mueller time is coming. They don't go in the streets. They don't stand up. They wait for Mueller. For 2 years, people have been disoriented, demobilized by the Democratic Party, by Rachel Maddow, by MSNBC, from waiting for Mueller. And now Mueller has come out, and it's giving a greater green light to the escalation and consolidation of fascism. So there's a question posed for all of us. What are you going to do now? Are you going to accept this? Are you going to go along with this as this escalates? Or are you going to take the first step to shake out of that passivity, shake off that spectator behavior as fascism is being consolidated, and take a step into the streets and be part of getting organized to take this further towards rising up, bringing forward the millions who hate what's being done, who hate the white supremacy, who hate the assault on women's reproductive rights, the anti-LGBTQ bigotry that's being implemented from the highest offices in the land. Step out against this and the whole program of fascism, and get organized to drive it out from below, which is the only way it can be stopped. This is what the worse than a joke of the Democratic Party telling you to wait for the investigations, wait for Mueller now, wait for 2020. We have to stop waiting. We have to act.
You know, one of the things that you just got into a little bit was around the Democratic Party and the whole way that that's been approached from the Democrats' side of things. And I mean, Pelosi, who was just disgusting in the kind of response she had to everything that's been going on around this. And basically don't worry about it. We got a couple of years and we'll be able to take care of it after that. It's not a big deal. Don't worry. And meanwhile, you have this Nazi who is actually backed by other Nazis getting his fascist regime really pulled together. This has been a big leap in that. So let's talk about Pelosi and the Democrats and then what's going on with the regime.
Yeah, I think what you see in this contention, and we should understand there's very sharp fighting at the top of society. There's a tremendous fight going on between the fascist wing, the Trump-Pence regime, and the fascist Republican Party, and what broadly sort of mainstream imperialists, the Democratic Party, which is a party of war crimes and crimes against humanity. It's an imperialist ruling class party. But there's huge divisions at the top of this society, in the ruling structures, over how to respond to big changes in the world, big changes to the American empire abroad, big changes thrust on it from climate change and the demands that's posing. Even as they deny it, it's part of what's driving a refugee crisis that they are having to respond to in this country and around the world. Big changes within the U.S. I'm not going to try to back into all the analysis behind this. I would commend to your listeners an incredibly deep and scientific and insightful talk by Bob Avakian called The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America at revcom.us, where BA gets into the roots of this fascism and the fight at the top. But what I'll say right now is that you have a fascist wing and you have the Democrats, which is what you're asking about, who have big differences with that fascism. But like Nancy Pelosi said, when she said impeachment is off the table, it would divide the country. To the Democrats, order and stability for their empire, to maintain the stability of the ruling structures and the American empire is more important to them than justice. They are more afraid of the kind of upheaval of the people from below getting in the streets that it would take to stop this fascism, to stop this white supremacy, to stop this ethnic cleansing of immigrants, to stop the assault on women's right to abortion and birth control, to stop the denial of science and the acceleration of climate change through ripping up environmental protections. The Democrats are more afraid of the upheaval and instability that it would cause to their empire to unleash the people to fight against this, to stop it, than they are of fascism. So they will go along. And we've seen this for 2 years. They've picked around the edges. Actually, we've seen it for a couple of decades as fascism has been growing in this country. And the Democrats are always seeking common ground. They're always disputing, but on terms that are set by the fascist and now the fascist Trump-Pence regime. And those terms keep going further and further to the right. So they're always a little bit to the left of it, but they're going further and further to the right. So you have now we've experienced. I mean, you look at what's happened to immigrants. You look at what's happened, a national emergency to shut down the border and build a wall. You look at what's being normalized. Trump's open assault on the media as enemy of the people. All of this. And the Democrats, even when they're the ones under fire, even when he led a rally with thousands of people chanting, lock them up, about the people who led the investigation of him. Even as he calls them treasonous, and let's never forget that in this country, the penalty for treason is death. This is what Trump is talking about these Democrats. The Democrats still say, you know what, let's move the agenda. Let's talk about other issues. Let's not go after. Let's not impeach. Let's bring the country together, as the only basis on which that can be done is to continue this drive towards fascism and the collaboration and to lead people into that collaboration, which again gets me to the point that people have to shake off this stupor, this bamboozlement. You got to stop getting played by these Democrats. I mean this very deeply. There's huge stakes for humanity. You can't be Lucy Charlie Brown with the football. She's going to pull it away. You're going to run for it. She's going to pull it away. Well, the Democrats are going to pretend that they're going to be the quote unquote resistance. I mean, my God, who gets to claim the term resistance when all they've done is collaborate, capitulate, normalize, and keep passive, corral and domesticate people's anger? And they've made people, they've led people to wait, wait, wait. Now Mueller's delivered nothing to stop Trump. I mean, we don't know what's in the report. There may be things that could be part of bringing him down if there was a struggle from below. But on its own terms, nothing that will stop Trump. And not only have people been rendered passive through this, they've been disoriented. Their eyes have been trained on conspiracy and collusion and ideas of whether what ties Trump might have had to Russia, which we, whether they're there or not, are not at the core of the danger that the Trump-Pence fascist regime poses to humanity, which is its fascist program, which is the qualitative change in the form of rule that they are implementing with really stakes that threaten the future of human civilization, fascism and the sole superpower on the planet. That's what we have to stand up against. And waiting for these Democrats who value order above justice, who value stability for their empire, and are terrified of the people standing up and are working overtime to keep you domesticated and passive, that is a dead end. And it's not okay. It's not okay to do that and to tell yourself you're opposed to this.
It's very heavy what you're talking about, because there is this point that when you look at, at what the Democrats are saying, you can all the stuff you're saying about Trump, I mean, that, if that isn't bone-chilling to people, but it's not enough for it to be bone-chilling, because you have to actually go beyond that. But what the Democrats are saying to people is basically, look, and it's, yes, it's Pelosi's wise-ass stuff going on, but then there's this other stuff that's happening here where it's you know, it's actually pervasive among the people. You know, this thing about people, who, even people who have not, who have given up to some in some way, but haven't really dug into what is going on, what's possible to in opposition to that, and what's possible to stop it, you know, and where could we go with our lives, with the future of the planet, which is all stuff that's actually at stake here, right? And but you're looking at this and you're thinking, okay, there's a thing here where they actually have, they have not, no one has actually put forward except for like refused fascism, the, you know, the RCP, the, you know, the Revolutionary Communist Party, this, no one has really put forward any kind of really worked out, even the idea of we must, we can and we must stand up against this. So this, let's talk about this a little bit more, because the, there's, it's more dangerous than ever. And at the same time, it's, people are less motivated than ever to stand, to get out there.
Well, I think I want to speak to this on two levels. Fundamentally, and this is something that I'm working on as a member of the revolution tour that's traveling the country, that's organizing people into a movement for an actual revolution. The website revcom.us provides a lot of information about this tour and how you can connect with it. That fundamentally, we have to look at the system that has given rise to Trump and Pence, a system that was founded in white supremacy and slavery that has continued to purvey this. Trump is not an anomaly. He's not a betrayal of American principles. He's a hyper concentration of it in a time when the empire is facing great challenges and is moving towards open fascism. And this is a moment of extreme peril and escalation. This Mueller moment, we have to grasp, this is not just more of the same. He's on a warpath, on top of a warpath. And up till now, they've not been able to consolidate fully their fascist program, but they're moving on every front, on healthcare, against immigrants, against the rule of law, against any opposition within the halls of power or outside. So there is a moment that people need to act right now, whether you're a revolutionary or not, which is the second point I'll come to. But fundamentally, when you have a fascist regime that is considered legitimate and a so-called opposition party, which is collaborating and which to begin with was a party of war crimes and crimes against humanity, we have to look at the need for a radically different system, an actual revolution, and the overthrow of this system. That's what the revolution tour is spreading, and that's possible. And people have to lift their sights. There's a constitution written by Bob Avakian for the new socialist republic in North America, a society and a new state power that clears away the capitalist mode of production and the state that we live under now that enforces and keeps us from being able to dig up the white supremacy that so many have fought generation after generation to abolish, to dig up. But you can't dig it up. You can't end it as long as we live under this system. You know, you clear that away, you can dig up the patriarchy, the misogyny. That's not human nature, but it is the nature of this system. You can get through a process of struggle, through a historical period, to a world without borders. A world where we really are a community of human beings freely interacting, a world where we care for the planet instead of despoiling it. These things are possible, but only if we end the system that makes them impossible. So that's one thing. People should connect with the revolution.
Let me get to ask you one thing in relation to that, and then you can get into your next point, because I think it's important to get into it at the moment. There's actually, look, there's a part of this thing that actually really struck me is that, and there's something that BA said, that Avakian said about, which I thought is a few words, but it's really, really powerful and really apropos for today. The point of order is more important than justice is the way things are being approached. And I think people need to understand that, because this is, injustice has been the characterization of this if you're really honest about it. But it's always order is more important. And so the fear of actually unleashing and even in the absence of a massive movement, the very potential, the fear of that in the eyes of the ruling class, I think actually is really, it's instructive to people, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is. It's a very important question that Bob Avakian poses in that talk on why the Trump-Pence regime must go, which, again, is available at revcom.us as well as on refusefascism.org. And I think he makes the point that to the Democrats, order is more important to justice, but he poses it as a question. And I want to pose it as a question to the people, which is really important that he does this. And I think it's really important for everybody listening to ask yourself this question. To you, is order more important even if that's the order of fascism, is stability and not risking something and getting out of your comfort zone so important to you that you will go with that, even if that means that families continue to be separated at the border, kept in concentration camps, being housed under a highway overpass, and worse to come? Is order more important, or is justice more important to you? Including if that means stepping out of your comfort zone and can say, you know what, I'm not going to be so cynical as to believe that what we do doesn't matter, that the only way to affect change is to sit back and be a spectator when you know that the Democratic Party, who's been playing you for years now, does value order over justice. And Bob Avakian poses it. He says there used to be a common saying, you know, back in the 60s, which was a good time, you know, it didn't go far enough. That's the problem. But back in the 60s, there was a saying that to the people of the right, order was more important than justice. But to the people of the left, justice was more important. And people acted on it. They put their lives and their bodies on the line behind it. They stepped out of their comfort zone behind it. But that question is posed again today and with even greater stakes. And most people have been failing that test. Let's just be honest. We're 2 years into a fascist regime. Most people have, they were right. You were right when you came out 4 million strong after the inauguration and the Women's March. You were right to be in the streets. But now where has that anger gone? It's been domesticated. Instead of going further to drive this regime out, which, let's be real, is possible. All over the world, people have driven out hated regimes through mass, sustained, nonviolent protest. You go into the streets in massive numbers, and there are massive numbers who hate what is happening. Massive numbers, millions and millions of us. Go into the streets, it starts with thousands, it grows. You go night after night, you bring forward millions. If you had, just picture, if you had millions in the streets in this country saying, no, this regime must go in the name of humanity, we refuse a fascist America, that would create a crisis at the top. That would create an international situation where the section of the rulers right now who are under attack and collaborating and capitulating to the Trump-Pence regime because they value order more than justice would feel compelled to act a different way if the people were making such a demand that they felt they couldn't hold their stability together, they couldn't hold their empire together without moving in a different way, making some concessions to that demand from below. You could compel the removal of a regime. People have done it all over the world, and people could do it here. But this is not an abstract question for someday. You have to start. You have to start. You have to step into this. And right now the question is posed, and I return that. I'm glad you raised it. But the question is posed, as BA posed it in that talk, to you, is order more important or is justice more important? And if justice is more important, I will say this. Right now, you know, last week Trump came out and said, I have the military. I have the police. I have the bikers. I have the rough people. And right now they're playing nice. But if things get out of hand, in other words, if he gets opposed in any serious way, these people are going to be rough. They're going to stop playing by the... He's openly telling you he's going to invoke extra legal as well as state violence against opposition. They are mobilized. Thousands in the rally, you know, chanting, you know, white supremacists build the wall. I mean, really ugly things happening. They're mobilized. What about the people who don't want this? What about the people? Where are the people who are going to act in the name of humanity and value justice above order and get out of your comfort zone and be the first to carve out a path, to carve out a path of real resistance, not phony democratic hashtag resistance, which is really collaboration, but actual resistance, which means you put yourself in the streets. You go in the streets when it matters. Right after this Mueller non-indictment, when Trump is puffed up and the people are disoriented, there needs to be people who step out and help carve out a different path. But you have to start. And right now, when the object lesson is plain for everybody, waiting and saviors, waiting on investigations, waiting has gotten you nothing but more fascism and more danger. So we have to change that dynamic, and we have to start today.
We're going to get into that in a minute, but I just have to remind listeners that you're tuned into The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we're talking today with Sansara Taylor, writer for RevCom.us, Revolution newspaper, and a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and currently part of the National Revolution Tour. It's touring. It's here. It's going all over the country. It's going everywhere. People are fed up and want to do something.
That's right.
And if you're not fed up and want to do something, you're going to be set on fire when you go there by the fire that they're bringing into it, all right, because it really does. It's not only a great thing that they're doing, but it's a really necessary thing, a real importance. And we are here for quite some time, so stay here with us. Now, Sansara, there's something else that actually a caller just called in and said, You know, what the Democrats are doing is appeasement. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that a little bit, because I think if somebody's thinking about that, there's actually some kind of they're wrestling with something about, well, what the hell do you do in the face of this? The Democrats are just falling into appeasement. And we've seen many, many, it's not right to say tragic, even though it is tragic, as you pointed out earlier, but it's also just this reactionary stuff of appeasement that, you know, that I think is coming down full force on this. So I think it's a good question that he asked, she asked.
Yeah, it's in the revolution tour, we're making the point very clearly everywhere we go. The Republican Party is a fascist party, but the Democrats are also a party and a machine of war crimes and crimes against humanity. It is in their job description as a ruling class party of an American empire, of a capitalist imperialist system, the top dog imperialist on the planet. It's in their job description to value order for their system, stability for their system, to appease fascism rather than oppose it. That's in their job description. That's what they're there to do. Look, there's a fascist regime, and everybody knows it's going to be a fight to remove it, and the Democrats don't want that fight. Now, the people, our interests are not the same as the Democratic Party. As much as that line gets blurred, as much as the Democrats try to appeal to us and posture like a party of justice, they're not. They're there to corral you. That's their job, to corral you, to domesticate your anger. And think about this. Why would people all over war criminals and fascists everywhere say, vote, 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 wait for 2020, if that was really a meaningful way to stop them? And why would all of them be so disparaging of protest if that was really so ineffective? So I think this is very important, who the Democrats really are, and we have to break out of that spell. I also want to say very importantly, I know I'm speaking the truth as I understand it about the nature of this system, the unreformability of it, the need for the whole thing to be swept aside through an actual revolution. And there's a strategy for this. There's a leadership for this. In Bob Avakian and the new communism he's forged, that's what we're spreading with the tour. But it's also very important that, and RefuseFascism.org makes this point repeatedly, and I make this point everywhere I can, that whether you believe that America was never great, its founding principles cannot be made to work, it's a system of oppression and exploitation at its core that has to be swept aside, or whether you believe that this country can live up to better values and principles and be a model of a society and a world you'd want to live in, whether you are a revolutionary or somebody who is just, you know, who's a Democrat, who's a Bernie person, who's not thinking that much about politics, we're living in a time of rising fascism. And if you don't want to accept a fascist world, we have to come together. And driving out a regime through sustained mass nonviolent resistance and taking a step to carve that path open, standing in unity from different perspectives, from very different perspectives. Refuse Fascism is made up of people with diverse political perspectives, united in our common recognition that the Trump-Pence regime poses a catastrophic danger, not to Americans, not just to immigrants, not just to Black people, but to humanity as a whole, which includes all of those people. And that all of us have to get out of our comfort zone. We have to wage struggle from below in opposition to the appeasement of the Democratic Party, in opposition and in acting in our own interests. And there is a tremendous amount we could accomplish, a tremendous amount of energy, a tremendous amount of conscience, a tremendous amount of impact if we broke ourselves out of the shackles of waiting and relying on a party whose job is to domesticate us and funnel us back into the very institutions that produce this fascism.
Mm-hmm. I know we're running up on our time, but we'll stretch it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this thing about that you were just talking about, it actually is dangerous to not take the approach that you were saying. Mm-hmm. You know, it's dangerous to actually, you know, even if you had, look, if you get all these people that are running for Congress and all this, or running for the, you know, that in Congress who are saying that they're running to be the next president and stuff, all these Democrats, it's actually dangerous if you just fall into, you know, getting behind all this, because you're not, you know, it's exactly what you said. You're not doing anything to get at the root of this. And actually, this thing about this, you know, Nuremberg rally that happened is huge, and it means something to people, and people have to wrestle with what exactly is it going to take to stop that. And if you go with the Democrats, if you go with the way or anything from this system, if you go with anybody, whether it, you know, the Bernie you know, sort of pretend Democrat, as he would put it, or something. You know, you get this whole thing of that is all in the same bag. And where it's going to take you is right into the jaws of fascism. Mm-hmm. And then if it doesn't, it's still going to be it's going to be a horror for the people of the world. So let's talk about that in a way. We got about nights. We can take like maybe 8 minutes, something like that.
OK, great. Well, I'm also provoked by the Lister comment, the point that she's making, the distinction that she's nonviolent. And I want to be clear that what RefuseFascism.org is calling for is a mass nonviolent movement. And there's a way, if you want a world without the terror against immigrants, if you want a world without the vicious, violent white supremacy, if you want a world where women are treated like full human beings, not like punching bags, not like breeders of children and incubators, not like sexual objects, but full human beings. If you want a world where the lives of people around the world are valued as much as the lives of people in this country, if you want a world where the planet is cared for, you have to live by that now. And one of the things that Refuse Fascism has put forward, and I think it's important, is that in the resistance, that it is in the protests, in the nonviolent movement that it's building, is that people are living and modeling a different morality. And the revolution does this too on a deeper level. They're both deep levels. I don't want to put them against each other, but the revolution has principles in line with the whole revolutionary way out, the morality we live by. And also, the revolution does not initiate violence at this stage because we're serious about not getting into a fight until there's a point at which the people are actually in a position in their millions to rise up and win. And there's a strategy for how that would be done in a qualitatively different situation when there's a revolutionary crisis. But right now, I want to call on and respond to the listener about this question of nonviolence, and to everybody listening, that if you know, a lot of times we hear people say, oh, I want to build a safe space. A safe space where women are respected, a safe space where LGBTQ people are treated nicely, a safe space where people of color are treated with respect and not criminalized and profiled. Well, in this world of imperialism, you're not going to succeed in that in any kind of major way. And if you do, it's going to be at the cost of in a corner as the nightmare rages on and claims the lives of millions, and as fascism claims the future of humanity, frankly. But in the struggle to stand up against this, you can live those values, you can forge the culture of the world you're fighting for, and actually in that living contrast between the kind of protests that Refuse Fascism organizes, the kind of movement it's building, and the kind of hideous, ugly culture that we saw in Michigan at Trump's rally, that living contrast today is actually should be a point of inspiration and attraction to many more who, you know, a lot of people are, they said after Trump got elected, how do I talk to my child about this guy? He's so hideous. He's so such an affront to all the values that I hold. Well, you want there to be something in opposition to that. This is a movement of real resistance from below that breaks free of the Democratic Party and builds an opposition aimed at driving out this regime. And you want a world of that, you have to actually fight it all the way through and succeed in that, driving out the regime. And so I just think that if you have values against what Trump Pence are doing, you have to put them, you have to live them, and you have to make your life be about getting to a world where that's not what's dominating and through the hold of the state, the most powerful state in the world. So this is, I'm not sure I spoke to exactly your question, but I think it's important for people to understand, because there's been so much disparagement of protest. Oh, we tried that, it didn't work. Oh, you know, they don't listen. We're not talking about protest to appeal to the conscience of fascists. We're not talking about a protest to appeal to the conscience of a party of war crimes and crimes against humanity. We are talking about the people changing the course of history through struggle, which is the only way it's ever changed. Through getting out there and acting in a way that, yes, the rulers from their same calculus today, look at the Democrats do, their calculus is order over justice, stability for the empire over stopping fascism. But if you had a movement from below, again, starting by coming out at Hollywood and Highland today at 5 o'clock to the Trump Star to say no to this fascist regime, getting out there, helping carve out this path. If you had a movement from below that did take hold, where we do get organized, which needs a lot more people throwing in, that means a lot of people who weren't doing this yesterday need to start doing this today and tomorrow, working together. If we could draw forward the people who hate this and be in the streets from below in a sustained way and create the kind of crisis, political crisis, through our determined and relentless resistance and protest, nonviolent, the same calculus of those at the top that is compelling them to collaborate with fascism could compel them to be part of removing this regime. And there's historical precedent all over the world. People have driven out hated regimes. There's historical precedent in this country. A lot of what led to the impeachment of Nixon. Look, he committed crimes, but so did so many other presidents. And so has Trump. But that doesn't go anywhere unless there's a struggle from below. But if there's a struggle from below, all kinds of things can come into play at the top. So this is, we have to stop thinking that history changes by sitting in the passenger seat. It does not. And we're living in a moment. Look, it's just an accident of history. I was talking to some high school students yesterday, and we were saying, look, if you were born in the dark ages, generations went by, very little changed. It's unfortunate. It was the case. We're not living in a time. We're living in a time of momentous consequence. It's a historic pivot point for the actual history of humanity. We're living on the brink of environmental extinction. We're living at a time of the greatest refugee crisis on the world, 65 million since World War II. We're living in a time when there's one superpower and a full-on fascist genocidal regime has come to power. And what we do or don't do, what we do or don't do in this historical moment has greater impact on humanity all over the world and humanity for future generations than probably any generation that has lived before. And the question posed for each of us and for all of us collectively, what are we going to do about it? And for very much too long, people have listened to the voices that have been out there on MSNBC, that have been the Democratic Party, that have claimed to be the resistance, that say, don't worry, we'll deal with this. Don't worry, Mueller will come. Don't worry, there'll be some investigation. Don't worry, there'll be an election. Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry, we'll handle this. And the fascism has escalated. They have the Supreme Court now. They have the federal courts. We have not seen the full consequence of what this will mean. They have thousands and thousands of children have been torn from their parents and put in cages and separated. Many are still lost. And this has become not even on the front page anymore, not even on the tip of people's tongues anymore. This is just normal. All this is going on, and it's only the beginning. And we have a choice to make. And this is a moment of great consequence. Are we going to step out and do something different than we have done for the last 2 years? And that's what RefuseFascism.org is putting bluntly to everybody. We have a choice to make, and it has momentous consequence. And there's a way to start. It's going to be a struggle. We all have a lot to learn. None of us have all the answers. We're going to need each other. And new people are going to have to come into this, whether you're a revolutionary and a communist, whether you're a Bernie, I was going to say a Bernie bro, but a Bernie person of any kind, whether you're for Bernie, whether you campaign for Hillary, no matter where you line up, if you don't want to accept a fascist America, if you recognize that we're living in a historically, significant moment, you have a role to play. What you do and do not do has consequence. And it's an accident of history. We didn't pick it, but we're living here and it's on us. And visit RefuseFascism.org. That's the website to go for more information, RefuseFascism.org. And RevCom.us for more about the revolution.
Sansara, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks so much,
really
Michael.
Cool. We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Tales from the dark side, evidence of the settlements on my hard drive. Man, I swear my heart died at the end of that car ride. When I saw that checkpoint, welcome to apartheid. Soldiers wear military green at the checkpoint. Automatic guns, that's machine at the checkpoint. Tables not M16s at the checkpoint. Fingers on the trigger, you get leaned at the checkpoint. Little children, grown adults and teens at the checkpoint. All your papers better be clean at the checkpoint. Gotta put your finger on the screen at the checkpoint. And pray that red light turns green at the checkpoint. And Martin Luther King had a dream when the checkpoint he wake with loud screams.
All right, Teddy, thank you very much, man. All right, that was Sansara Tell we were just talking with. And right now, I'm really pleased to be bringing to the show Richard Falk. Richard's someone who's been on the show a number of times, always has something extremely important to talk about, to bring to us. And we're going to be talking about the assault on Gaza by the Zionist apartheid regime and the larger context, including the fact that the Trump regime's steps to erase the culture, history, and existence, the very existence of the Palestinian people. Richard is the Albert G. Milbank Professor Emeritus of International Law at Princeton University and visiting Distinguished Professor in Global and International Studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And he's the former UN Special Rapporteur on the Palestinian human rights in the occupied territories. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. Glad to be with you again.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, man. But let's jump into it because we're going to be out on the time. On March 21st, Trump declared that it's time for us to fully recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights, a region of Syria that's strategically important and that was seized by Israel during a war in 1967. There's been a lot of things focused up around this. It's very important for people to understand what's the significance of this. So what's it, and what is the significance of this move by Israel around that? Can we start there?
Yes, it has multiple reasons. There are multiple reasons to be really concerned and in a way appalled by this further Trump initiative to validate Israeli aggression and expansion. There had been an understanding ever since the end of World War II that the one thing that could no longer happen is that a country, by the use of force and military instruments, could expand its territory. And that had underpinned an international consensus that continues to exist. And the initiative by the Trump White House has been repudiated by our supposed European allies and by the UN and by the countries in the region. It is a unilateral geopolitical move that has no legal significance and is contrary to international morality and to a stable world order. But what it does do is it gives Israel a green light for this surge of expansionist efforts on their part, and the Netanyahu kind of belligerent foreign policy. And it also creates a precedent for annexing the West Bank, because there's no reason, if the rationale which Trump and Netanyahu put forward, which was since Israel was in a defensive mode when it occupied these territories, it's under no obligation to give the territory back. And that's a unilateral modification of international law that has no legal or moral significance, but it is a geopolitical move. And to the extent that geopolitics controls political outcomes, it has a destructive potential significance for the Palestinian people and their fundamental right of self-determination.
Now, you mentioned the West Bank. There's also this question, the question that actually is in everybody's mind today, in particular with Gaza and the whole assault on Gaza. That's linked up to exactly what you're talking about as well, right?
Yes. Well, Gaza is different because Gaza is not part of the Zionist master plan to absorb into Israeli sovereignty the whole of the so-called promised land. Gaza is not part of that biblical conception of Israel. And therefore, Israel has used it partly for the experimental purposes in counterinsurgency warfare, partly as a way of signaling to the region that it's prepared to use excessive force to promote its goals, and partly in the hope that it can separate Gaza from the rest of the Palestinian occupied reality, because they're worried in the end about what is sometimes called the demographic bomb. In other words, that the Palestinians will come to outnumber the Jews in the territory that is absorbed by Israel. So ideally, Israel would like either Egypt or Jordan to take responsibility for Gaza, but neither of these governments has shown any interest in doing so, and the Gazans themselves are very much identified with the Palestinian struggle, as their recent year-long demonstration affirms, and it's the place historically where resistance has been strongest. The First Intifada in 1987 started there in Gaza. And so the Gazans have both been most victimized among the Palestinians, aside from the refugees and those that have been direct casualties, and they've also been the center of resistance. So it's a very powerful dimension of the whole Palestinian national movement.
Yeah, you know, Richard, when you talk about this, it's very heavy if people will stop and think about this, because the genocidal implications of this for the Palestinian people are extremely important for people to grasp, that this is, you know, yes, what you're talking about with Gaza and the assault on Gaza, and even, that's just the never-ending assault on Gaza that is just, you know, what you've been saying, and it really does impact the people's very ability to survive, literally, you know, given that...
Literally, yeah. And it's gone on for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a moral scandal that the world has allowed this to continue to happen, even though it's the most visible symbolic moral issue after South African apartheid was dismantled. And the UN, unlike any other place, has real legal and political responsibility for what has gone wrong in Palestine after World War II, because the British dumped the Palestinian future into the hands of the UN, and the UN tried to impose this partition, which defied the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. So there was a kind of original sin that involved imposing a Jewish state on a non-Jewish society. And a lot of what's flowed from that initial decision can be understood in terms of these repressive genocidal policies that have been relied upon.
Mm-hmm. Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today. I'm really glad we've had the chance to get you here again, Richard. We're talking today with Richard Falk on the assault on Gaza by the Zionist, the assault on Palestine, let's just put it that way, the assault on Palestine by the Zionist apartheid regime and the larger context of it, including the Trump regime's steps to erase the culture, history, and existence of the Palestinian people. Richard, you know, one of the things that really struck me as I was preparing for this discussion with you is this whole point of, you know, you have... With the West Bank, you have 2.8 million people living in the West Bank. And the way that this has been, I mean, the way the people have been tortured there, it's the daily existence is almost, you know, you wake up in the morning, one, you're not sure whether you're going to wake up at all when you go to sleep. But it's also everything that you have to go through, including the fact that there's been large scale seizure of large parts of the West Bank. So they've actually trimmed it down immensely, and that has had a major impact on the ability of the Palestinian people to, one, you know, to even survive, let alone have their government and do everything else, but their very ability to survive. And it raises questions about what is it that the Israeli regime sees doing to the Palestinian people.
No, you're absolutely right, and the time dimension is very important. I mean, the whole idea of belligerent occupation, which occurred after the 67 war, was an idea of a very temporary suspension of the rights of a society during a period of transition between war and peace. But what has happened in the West Bank is that ever since 1967, which is now over 50 years, people have been living in a rightless condition, and they've been subject to what is the most obvious form of the apartheid structures that Israel has imposed on the Palestinian people as a whole, and there's no end in sight. In addition to that, the West Bank is carved up into these small units in which Palestinians have to pass endless checkpoints to get from one part of the West Bank to another, and are often humiliated at those checkpoints, have to wait for hours in very strong heat. And the Israelis who live in the West Bank and their unlawful settlements, they go right through. They have they're not stopped at the checkpoints. They have different license plates, and it emphasizes this apartheid nature of governing in a way that privileges one race and subjugates the other race. And that's the essence, I think, of the apartheid nature that's also played out in the refugee conditions that Palestinians have been subject to ever since 1948, an incredible length of time. If you think about it, whole generations have been born, lived, and died in that kind of subjugated condition. So this is something that cannot be viewed without some feeling that a great crime against a whole people has been committed and is continuing to be tolerated, and by the Trump White House has been accentuated, because Israel has been encouraged to do things that are beyond even its own extremist leadership's vision, such as moving the American embassy to Jerusalem, cutting off all humanitarian aid to the administrators of Gaza and the West Bank, now validating the Israeli occupation of the Golan Heights, and moving generally in the direction of a one-state Israel solution that is not likely to be able to be both Jewish and democratic. It already has passed this basic law, which almost makes explicit the claim that critics have made that Israel has become an apartheid state, because the basic law states that only the Jewish people have an exclusive right to self-determination. Mm-hmm. And that's an extraordinary kind of claim to be making in the 21st century, and completely repudiates the human rights tradition that has been at least formally accepted by all governments in the world.
Now, you were talking, when we first started talking about this, when I was asking you about being on the show, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about the recent AIPAC meeting and that just passed. And, you know, this whole thing of the you know, what Netanyahu, what he did in relation to that, but also what was brought to that in terms of the plan, the future for the Palestinian people.
Well, I think what I really was kind of interested in expressing was that even though there's been some criticism now of AIPAC as exercising too much influence, creating divided loyalty between U.S. and Israel, the real harm that AIPAC does is to shift the conversation away from supporting Israel to avoiding the wrongdoing that Israel is guilty of. For instance, J Street is also pro-Israeli, with a validly pro-Israeli. It's a kind of liberal Zionist NGO, but it doesn't do. It acknowledges the wrongdoing of Israel. It's not objectionable in the fundamental way that AIPAC is, which is to whitewash the criminality of the Israeli government, and to punish anyone that dares to criticize its role in doing this. And in that sense, the recent incident with the Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar is illustrative that there's a kind of punitive backlash that has been very effectively applied to anyone who dares raise their democratic voice to object to AIPAC. Even the pharmaceutical companies and the Pentagon don't do that. That punitive backlash is what distinguishes AIPAC and makes it an unacceptable form of lobbying, and should be it should be clarified that these two things are what really are unacceptable about AIPAC. Mm-hmm. As far as the recent meeting is concerned, it gave a platform to Netanyahu and his opponent, who's almost indistinguishable on Palestinian issues, Benny Gantz, the former chief of staff of the Israeli Defense Forces, and generally gave a kind of cheerleading presence to this Trump extremism that has been exhibited toward Israel and indeed toward the whole of the Middle East in the years he's been president.
Mm-hmm. Now, this has got to be really quick because, and there's so much more. I got to have you back on real soon because there's so much. I have, Richard, like 20 questions sitting here for you. Okay. But let's do this. I also noticed that recently you were involved in standing up around the students out, students who have been standing up for the Palestinian people, supporting people by standing up to major fascist moves to repress campus criticism of Israel. That there's been a real, and especially out in, Claremont Schools.
Yes. See, I think that these issues are very important in the larger context that we've been talking about, because it's clear the UN is not going to be able to help the Palestinian people achieve their rights. Diplomacy has failed. It's the responsibility and opportunity of civil society and democratic social forces to do what is necessary to create the kind of pressure that did work in bringing apartheid to an end in South Africa. Mm-hmm. In other words, this is a bottom-up kind of democratic reaction against an oppressive set of conditions that have been emerging over the decades in relation to the Palestinian people. And therefore, Pitzer took a lead position by saying we will suspend the study abroad program with Haifa University as long as these discriminatory conditions exist. And this decision by its Senate, which consists of students, faculty, and staff, was vetoed by the president of Pitzer, Melvin Oliver, and it's the first time in the history of the college that a president has vetoed what its own faculty council has decided.
All right, Richard.
So it is significant.
Yeah, definitely. On that note, we've got to cut it out, though, because I'm running up on my time, but I really look forward to talking to you again very soon, man, right? Because I have all those questions, all right? All right, Richard, thank you very much.
Take care.
You too.
Bye
now. Bye. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Richard Falk on the assault on Gaza by the Zionist apartheid regime in the larger context. All right, we got just a few minutes, and there's something I really felt just compelled to actually bring to you this time. This is a piece from Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, and it's taken from his film, The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America, a better world is possible. And this is a clip that talks about why is it that the Democrats can only try to resolve this on the terms of the system itself. All right, so check this out and we'll be right back.
Why is it that the Democrats can only try to resolve this on the terms of the system, and for that reason cannot offer any alternative that is in our interest, in the interests of humanity? Why are they determined to keep things within the established norms and acceptable limits? We can turn to the words of Barack Obama, shortly after Trump won the Electoral College vote. "We, Democrats and Republicans, are on the same team," Obama insisted. And he made a point of saying that we should wish Trump well and help him succeed, because his success is success for all of us. Well, we can say that here Obama was telling an important truth. Ultimately and fundamentally, they are all on the same team, which explains why the Democratic Party will only oppose what the Trump-Pence regime is doing within narrow limits and always in the interest of the team of which they are all a part. And really, we should all help Trump succeed with his fascist agenda, because a successful fascism will be good for all of us? Only with the perverted logic of the system all these politicians serve, and with the poisonous outlook of American chauvinism, could anyone put forward such a position. Like the Republicans, the Democrats believe in the superiority of the capitalist system of exploitation and the exceptional greatness of America and its empire. They champion a brave new world of 21st century globalization, which rests on a vast network of sweatshops where people, including children, slave long hours for near starvation wages. They firmly believe in the right of America to dominate the world and to overturn governments, bomb countries, and slaughter people to do so. But they say it should be done with the cooperation of allies and in the name of making the world more free, orderly, and peaceful. They will talk about diversity and inclusiveness while actually acting to maintain the fundamental relations of inequality and oppression that are hallmarks of this country, because those relations are built into this system and it could not exist or function without them. In short, even with their real differences with the Republicans, they represent and serve the same system, the systems whose normal workings have now brought fascists to power.
All right, that was Bob Avakian, and that was taken from a film that he made, and the name of the film is The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. A better world is possible. I want to thank all of you for listening today. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson. Where did he go? Jeff Pryor, I want to thank you. Good to have you back here. My board offer today, Teddy Robinson. Good to have you working with me again, man. And we'll talk to you again next week, all right? So take care.
What good is troubled times? We live in troubled times. What part of history we learn when it's repeated? Some things will never overcome. If we don't seek it, the world stops turning. Paradise burning. So don't think twice. We live in troubled times. We live in troubled times. We live in troubled times.